We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Mike, no Darius today. And this time of year can be a little tricky for the pod, right? Everybody wants to talk free agency, and with Mike and I working for the Lakers, it can be, you know, interesting territory, and you'll hear us talk about skill guards. And yesterday, you guys did a great pod on the big man position, thinking big, right? Where we think we speak more in generalities about types of players. And but we're about to enter that portion of the offseason over this next week where it's not theoretical players, it's actual players. We had a KCP traded to Denver this morning, right? There are going to be more transactions like that where before they're officially announced, we can't discuss that. So between that, and we've been going, you know, pretty hard 4 or 5 days a week for most of this season, this is going to be the last pod that we do until the moratorium lifts. So we're going to take the next week off. So these are going to be kind of our final thoughts heading into free agency and just discussing like what we're hoping for, where we go from here, what we think or hope will happen in the next week. But again, in kind of that general sense. So Mike, here we are, right? We have made it through the 2022 season, the dreaded 2022 season. And the next time we are on this pod, we will have a different team, at least to some extent. What's on your mind here at this point?
I think it's going to be a difficult process for the Lakers to find all of the types of players that would ideally fit the roster. And so that doesn't mean that they can't do it. And I think that they'll definitely thread the needle and acquire some players that fit really well. The question is, can they get 6 or 7 guys, right, that really ideally fit within a roster that's anchored around LeBron or anchored by LeBron and Anthony Davis? And the guys that are still on the roster, other than those two, are mostly smaller guards. And so the question is, how many of these bigger, whether it's two-way wings or versatile bigs, as you mentioned, Darius and I went through sort of what some of the ideal bigs might be. But what we've been talking a lot more about, Pete, for these last couple of months is what the Lakers lacked on last year's roster and what type of players those were relative to when they had more success around the build of LeBron and AD the previous two seasons. And I know that you and I both have a list. Of course, the Lakers and every team has a master list. And this to me is kind of like when you're doing your fantasy draft and you've got your cue set and all of a sudden the names just start going off the board even before you get a chance to get players, right? Because of trades, mm-hmm. You know, KCP, for example, oh, maybe that was a player. Would have loved to have seen if you could trade, you know, for a player like that to get back, or even stuff that isn't necessarily realistic. And mm-hmm. It's just about when you start to see the tweets come in about reported trades, which will come in before the team announced them, because that's the way that the league is these days, which of those players are going to be in purple and gold? And, you know, I know that we have some ideas as to which ones they are. Hopefully we can make up for that with in-depth analysis once that moratorium clears, because we are, needless to say, very interested in each and every one of those roster moves.
One of the players that I expect to be in purple and gold is Russell Westbrook at the end of that. That is something that I have been a little surprised by the reporting and just basically, let me put it like this, Mike. If the Lakers are about to trade Russell Westbrook, they seem to have a lot of people fooled, right? Like there is nothing in terms of a great deal of buzz of like, oh, these two teams are negotiating or it's on the precipice of this or that. Like, no, that like a lot of indications are that they expect him to be on the roster. Now, there's also reporting that they'll continue to explore trades, right? But to me, that's the, I'm a little surprised by that because one of the things that has accompanied that reporting is the notion that we are not particularly interested in giving up the 2027 or 29 first, or not particularly interested in taking on longer term contracts. And so what that indicates, Mike, is that there is something on the table. If you wanted to do one of those things, you could get that done. Like if the Lakers were in a position where we were like, we gotta move on from Russ at any costs, that the implication there is that they could if they wanted to. And so that, it's also beneficial to negotiation, right? To, if you are in trade discussions, to have that sort of perspective, like we're fine keeping this guy, but we've talked so much about the calibration toward Russ and what that means and all of that, right? And so what I would like, if he is on the roster at when we come back in a week, that calibration to be toward those guys who can space the floor, who can run the floor. On the pod yesterday, right, you had some ideas about like, why not let, you know, guys like Dwight shoot the ball, let JaVale type shoot the ball, right? And I think that's an interesting discussion to be had. But that, to me, the first part of calibrating toward Russ, we spent so much time last year having that conversation about coaching. But really, the first place is roster. We had a bunch of guys that couldn't run, couldn't move, couldn't really space the floor particularly well, had several non-shooters. And so long as we account for that, I think we can build a good team. I don't think that we can build a championship caliber team, but we got a lot of real estate that we've got to make up between now and then. So to me, Mike, that's kind of like the first domino, and all indications are that Russ is staying.
Yeah, and you and I have gone back and forth on this, and we don't have Darius here to try and come in and fly in as Switzerland as he is on vacation. I guess I could just summarize my perspective being that the roster to start the regular season here is not the exactly the roster that I'm considering when I'm formulating the style and the ideal personnel, because I think that's going to change come either the trade deadline or very much so at the end of the season. And so Russ, of course, is at the center of that. But if I don't know Russ is in the last year of his deal, I don't know what his plans are for the future. I don't know what the Lakers' plans are for the future with him. I do think that they both have probably talked about, you know, what are the best ways to fit him into this team. And from talking to Darvin Ham, and my article on Darvin should be out, Pete, today or by the time, at least a little bit later. And the thing that we talked about with Russ was much less about sort of the system and finding the right type of guys and pace and all that, and much more about that. I really, in Darvin's words, I really need you to be focused on the defensive side of the court. And kind of like what he said at the press conference, but he just goes further in that article. Mm-hmm. And included in that is not like an offensive style or getting the right players to run with Russ or anything. You know, he already has the offensive shell that he wants to play, which is that four out, one in, which is different, of course, from like how the Clippers play, for example, with five out, except when Zoo is in. And he likes to have that a rim threat, but he wants to base it more around LeBron and AD. And now I think that you consider Russ certainly too, because as he puts it, you basically look at your best players and then you build your offense out of that. But I think there's a separation between LeBron and AD and kind of what their skill sets are and Russ and how you're going to build an offense around that.
So I think that we can serve both. I don't think that there's such a like either or type of distinction. Like, you know, we'll get more into like the four out and kind of what it means because I think it's more about maintaining spacing principles than like, it's not like bunch of other teams don't play four out spacing, right? But I think that a preservation of spacing principles, similar to how Milwaukee does, when you have really downhill threats, that's one of the things that I'm hoping is that the experience from having a guy like Giannis, like defenses react to a player like Giannis in that they really have to go out of their way to take away the drive to the rim. And that opens up opportunities if you maintain your spacing principles correctly, right? But in order to do that, you also have to have the right personnel on the floor. So for me, for example, a way to do both is those two-way wings that we always talk about, right? Like there's having guys who can contribute on both ends of the floor. And with the assets that we have, we're not going to get an elite two-way wing by any means, but a guy who can play defense, knock down a spot up three, has utility if Russ wasn't on the team. We saw LeBron and AD win the championship with those guys,
always
right?
On all
and
teams,
so,
yeah,
but I think where the sensitivity really comes into play is if like Russ is on the floor with the two bigs or Russ is on the floor with THT, another non-shooter, right? And it's like, it's a subtle enough difference to where I think we can work around it and build a good team where if there are trade opportunities that come up at the trade deadline or you want to alter your team, you haven't built before then. And I think this is kind of speaks to a point that at least I think you're implying is that like, you don't want to build the team around Russell Westbrook now, and he might not be on the team at the deadline, probably won't be on the team after this season. So like, what's the point? But I think there's a way to build a team that can work with Russell Westbrook for now and get to the point of good. And then if you do make a trade at the deadline, you can still play the same style of play. You still have guys who can run, but there are just certain types of guys that like, it's a little more dangerous to put them on the court with Russ. So let's take a quick break, come back, continue our thoughts on upcoming free agency.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So in going through the free agency list, for one, there's not a lot of guys in our price range that I'm particularly inspired by. And that's kind of why the place where I've landed is I'd like to get two guys. I'd like to get two guys with that, break up the taxpayer MLE into two players, ideally. Now, there's one or two where it's like, yeah, I'd throw the full thing at that player because I think they really fit. But by and large, I'm more inclined to be like, let's get two wings. I'd like a 2-3 type and then a 3-4 type that's, you know, you split the MLE between those two and then a stretch five on a vet min. What's kind of your wish list at this point, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's the wish list is kind of if a balloon's going up, you know, you got to make sure you got the anchor on it because it's not going to be able to realize exactly what your dreams are. So I think there's some realism attached to what the wish list is. And sure. And anybody can do that just by simply looking at what's available and what the money is. And this is, again, the problem that we've kind of talked about all season is that once you have a certain number committed salary wise and every team in the league is looking for those types of players that can stay on the floor on both ends. And a lot of other teams are going to have more resources. And some teams are going to be a little bit ahead of the pecking order just based on how they finished last year. Whereas in the past, I think the Lakers have been closer to the top, not that they're far down, right? Like they still are a attraction. Absolutely. And especially because these places could render a lot of playing time
Yeah, how much do you think that's a factor? I was just going to ask you that, Mike. That's probably our best selling point, is that if you can play defense and knock down an open three, we probably have some run for you where there are other guys you're competing with on other teams for those spots.
So, I think it's a factor. The only thing mitigating that factor is that when you're going, when you're a player and you're trying to think of, all right, I can get to a specific spot and once I get there, I'm going to show them. So I think there's a lot of confidence going in for players to win spots, even in places where maybe they won't. And therefore, mm-hmm. why don't I just take the money? Which is something totally expected and understandable, right? So, but the question is, what is the difference between that money and how can you sell? Hey, but if you're getting 30 to 35 minutes here, you know, on your deal, then you can make more money in your next deal. And I think that's a much harder sell the younger that you are, when you haven't made that money yet. So I'm just not counting on it, but I do acknowledge it as a selling point for sure.
I sure hope along those lines, Malik Monk gets paid by someone and that we can make that argument a little more compelling along those lines, right? And so I think though that, I don't know, between the playing time, between the stage of LA, that's the thing about us, is that like you can't quietly succeed in LA. Like if you ball out, we will certainly let the whole world know about it. Even if on a bad team, you know, a guy like Monk played well and you know, he got some shine. And so I'm hoping that plays into it. And there are that kind of where. Let's take that in the direction of like young guys versus veteran players. These are the kinds of guys that are normally available for these between vet min and taxpayer MLE slots. You've got your young guys, a lot of like second round pick types that have kind of earned a spot in the NBA, but haven't really gotten a big role yet. And then you've got your responsible adults that are your vets that are solid, but like they do what they do. They know exactly what their role is and their job is, but maybe they're not the athletes that they were when they were younger, or the same athletes that those younger guys who are the second round picks who've kind of grinded to the point where they have a free agent market for them. So what's your, like, we've talked a lot about the skills that we need and whatnot. We have a lot of young guys. There is some argument to be made that we need some vets on the team.
They definitely need both of those things. And is there some player that checks both of those boxes, that's the larger two-way wing that also has some veteran experience and is going to be comfortable out there in moments when, you know, late in the shot clock or late in a game, he gets the ball from LeBron and is happy to just get that ball up and not feel the pressure of the moment and all that. So that is an issue. And I think that where they'll, I want to make sure that this has the requisite level of realism versus optimism versus skepticism, but I'm almost trying to see this more as a 2-year type of roster build, which seems impossible with LeBron in his 20th season. But I don't know if enough can be done in this offseason to turn the Lakers into a real contender, barring a bigger trade. But
yep.
But that's not to say that if they just get a couple of guys that fit that you can trust offensively, and they can hit a couple of shots, and are basically our role players willing to do the dirty work that was not apparent on the roster as much last season, then I don't know. Then I think they could be better than even I'm giving it credit for, based in one part on Anthony Davis, right, having consistent health and this new energy brought by Darvin and maybe some buy-in that's gone there. So like I think that could help a good start. I'm just trying to compare that depth of talent on the roster to say what, you know, what Boston or Golden State just threw out in the finals, or a healthy Milwaukee, where you're looking at a minimum 8 guys, you know, that you really trust to be on the floor when it counts. And it's hard for me right now to get to 8, you know? Mm-hmm. And so what can you get to there? Can you get to 6? Can you get to 7? So that's kind of what I'm thinking.
No, I think you're spot on with that. And I think if we can even get to 5 or 6 that are of guys where we're like, yeah, that's a playoff rotation player, there's a certain degree of like, let's put ourselves in the position to succeed. Let's put ourselves in the position to make that next step. Like the place you're talking about of having those 7-8 guys like we did in the title season, or those playoff teams that you brought up from this year, where we're far enough away from that. We're like, let's take those intermediate steps first. And I think that, especially with the Russ situation,
you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
And I feel like last year we did just about everything wrong. And that we don't have to do just about everything wrong this upcoming season. And I think we're off to actually a very good start. But this is the most important part. But if we sign guys who are a little bit taller, like we can't have eight guards on the roster this year. You brought up earlier that we've got a lot of the guys that are already under contract are on the shorter side, right? So those, like, to me, it's like 6'5" and up from here on out, right? Like the guys that we acquire, it's really important, I think, that are around that size or taller, and preferably closer to 6'9" than 6'5". And those are the types of guys, Mike, that I think that if we rectify those kinds of mistakes that we made last year, we can put competent lineups out on the floor next year. That said, though, it's a bit deflating from a Laker fan perspective of, like, you got this LeBron and AD roster, yeah, like, no real path to contention right now. It's hard to see, you know, so that is something that, I don't know, if from where I'm sitting, there's that, like, I'm always in the moment, and, like, let's be better than we were tomorrow than we were today, and better today than we were yesterday. But that is a bit deflating, right? That idea, you've got LeBron and AD, you should be able to field a contender.
Well, a lot of that comes right back to simply to Russ and to the number that he's making next year, and what can he give you, you know, provided that he's on the roster. And as Pelinka told it, right, the first thing that was going to go off in that list was him picking up his option, which was reported on Tuesday, I believe. And I don't know if that's been confirmed by the team just yet. But so that was the first thing. And now, okay, so now that he's on the roster, right, what is he going to provide? And is that going to be any different from last season? And is that going to be something that is steered towards some other kind of move down the line? Or is it something that they really think that maybe they can maximize it differently this year? That's where that discussion starts. And since what we saw last year, despite the fact they only played, what, 21 games together or something? That's a big part of it. But what we saw last year is hard to just throw into contender status in terms of what that fit was. And
they deserve no benefit of the doubt, Mike. They're going to have to show it on the floor.
So that's where it's coming from, right? And you can't, with what that number is, we could talk about all of these, nailing all of these minimums and the splitting up the mid-level exception. That's just not a lot from a tool standpoint, you know? And that's where it comes down to. But I know we have to take another break. I am curious, one name that we haven't discussed much so far this offseason is Kendrick Nunn. And I'm just curious what you think he can bring. He's not big, right? But he does have some skills. And I'm curious the overlap there with THT, another Chicago guard, and to an extent, Russ. So I'm wondering how much can be gotten from there, where Nunn was a part of a serious playoff rotation in Miami that got all the way to the finals. And what did they do to protect what his weaknesses are? So I'm a little curious your take on Nunn and how much of, if you're almost looking at him like an acquisition since he didn't play last year.
Very much so. Let's take a break. And when we come back, let's get into Nunn. So I view Nunn similarly to Monk in that his greatest strength is that he's a three-level scorer who really runs the floor well in transition. So that idea that if we have Russ on the team, that we have to play into Russ's strengths, which is more open court play, athleticism, the ability to run is important, right? It's one of the reasons why the old guys who can't run last year were like the exact opposite of the type of player that I think is really thrives next to Russ. There's a certain athleticism necessary that Nunn has. But on top of that, he brings some of those skills, right? One of the biggest weaknesses of Russ is that he's one of the worst shooting guards in the NBA, meaning one of the worst shooting guards, point guard or shooting guard in the league, especially amongst the starters. And so that's an unusual position to not have shooting, right? Like if you have a five that can't really shoot, or even a four in a lot of starting lineups, that's like, okay, that's normal. You make up for that in other spots. But if you have that type of shooting deficiency as a jump shooter from the guard spot, you really have to make up for it elsewhere. And one of the reasons why I thought Monk was such a good partner was his ability to score at all three levels, get to the rim, hit that little elbow pull up, hit his step backs. And we all really loved watching Monk and, you know, him fill it up in that respect. Nunn is a similar type of player, but he is he scores more out of organized actions. So he's really good on handoffs. That's something that Miami does a lot. And, you know, in their offensive system, a lot of stuff through Bam. That year, I think Olynyk was on the team. And so Nunn's ability to like come off a handoff and either shoot, pull up, or go all the way to the rack. He's a phenomenal finisher around the basket, despite his size, got a really great floater. And so I do view him as a new acquisition. I do view him kind of like filling that spot if Monk is gone. And so that's part of the reason why, Mike, that I'm like 6'5 and up and ideally closer to 6'9 is I think that kind of fills – like he fills that spot. And the big question for me is THT. And like can we get him – I think he's probably the player that's hurt the most by Russ on the roster. Because the stuff that THT does well is it bumps into things that Russ does well. And Russ is a 30 plus minute player or has been up to this point. I'm actually curious if we be like, hey, if you need to play 28 minutes a game and we need to get that defense out of you. And, you know, instead of carrying the full load, like I'm curious on his minutes there. But even then, Mike, like that's 20 minutes for THT. So he's the guy that I'm kind of like, where does he fit in? And I think that we'll know more based on how the rest of the roster lands. But how do you see those two guys in particular between Nunn and THT?
I think that you slotted Nunn really well there in thinking about some of the actions that Monk runs and some of the ways that he replaces that if that is required. And then for THT, yeah, this is one of those tough parts where it's kind of like wrong player, wrong role in the or right player, wrong role and wrong spot of his own development for what the Lakers needed last year. And how much of that has changed this year? Probably not a ton, based still on Russ alongside LeBron and AD, as opposed to Russ alongside, you know, two shooters or something, right? Or two guys. And so THT has had his moments of success when he has had the ball in his hands and he's gotten a couple perimeter shots to fall, you know, and he's had like the game that he likes to play. Him being asked to be a 3-and-D wing, which is what they sort of need. And yet what he can't do. Yeah, that it's like, it's one of those things. It's this, it's the old, it's the tried and true, you know, square peg round hole type thing.
Yeah.
Like it's a difficult thing to envision that changing too much. Even if he's done nothing but work on his 3-point shooting and his defense this offseason, he's still so young and he's still so, he knows.
Well, it's not who he is, Mike.
No. And he knows it's not that he's
fundamental
got,
player. It is.
Exactly. He knows he's got a real hard to find NBA skill. Like real NBA skill, which is breaking your guy down, getting into the middle of the paint, finishing or finding a shooter. Like that's still what so many teams want and wish they had, if not in their starting spot, at a minimum off the bench, you know, for big minutes. So that part has been, I still think, hard for me to square. But the one thing that I do like with THT is that he's one of those guys who defensively, if he can figure out some of the off ball stuff better, he can size up because of his length and because of his strength. And so we were talking about, I don't really want to see too many acquisitions that are below like 6'5", 6'6", right? But he's that kind of guy where he's not 6'5", or 6'6", but he can play bigger because of that. So
yeah, between his length and his size, absolutely. And he can use that size. One of the things I like about him, I like him as a defensive prospect more than anything at this point, is that he can guard on the ball at that size. And so there's a certain oppressiveness to that weight and that length. He had some good possessions on BI there. When he guards up, guys can go over the top of him a bit, but he can win that ground game and he can win some physical battles in ways that, if I'm curious to what degree Darvin, and maybe you have insight on this after talking to him, how much does he try to replicate Milwaukee's just like, we're so big at every, like Drew Holiday, right? That similar, Drew Holiday is kind of the pinnacle of that type of on-ball defender.
Or Marcus Smart.
Really
yeah.
physical. Yeah, Marcus Smart, those types of guys. Like THT is built physically in a similar way and can pressure the ball, but do so with size. And so I would love if THT is here this upcoming season, offensively, he's a guard. Like, he's an on-ball guard that we asked to be an off-ball wing at the age of 20, 21 years old and expected that to work. Like, of course that didn't work. I just, like, I would love to get him back to being that on-ball guard. But even a guy like Kendrick Nunn takes some of those touches, along with Russ, along with LeBron, along with AD, who gets way more touches than big. So it's just, it's such a tough spot for THT that, honestly, going into the offseason, I wonder if he is somebody that we would look to move into a different circumstance or like as a trade chip, that because he still has his fans and believers around the league, that but I just projecting it ahead, Mike, it's going to be tough for him to find the touches necessary to be that.
Well, it just goes back to last year and the replication on the roster and all of those guys, all of those the shot creator types that don't specialize in the skills that you need around your main two shot creators, which I am including Anthony Davis in this. We don't think of him as a pure shot creator, like he's a point guard with the ball, but he's still the guy that you could just give the basketball to and the other team has to pay attention to it and something's going to happen. And you'd probably rather have that action than, you know, Kendrick Nunn or THT or Russ or Monk, any of these guys with the ball in their hands on the perimeter. So yeah, man, that question has not yet been answered. And this is why, once the free agency decisions start coming in, then we have to have more of those conversations and more of those thoughts, because there's going to be at least somebody else that comes in that is better with the basketball than not. And then where does that put THT, right? Where does that? So it's a, I don't have a great answer for it right now, other than I really hope that he's making some gains defensively and with his shooting, because those are ways that he can get on the court more. Like, if he can make another leap there.
No, very much so. But that's something that on this team, like, that's where the availability is. And so that would be great for his game. But it's very difficult to ask a player of his ilk, right? He's an on-ball player. He's used to even his jump shot. Like, he's got a nice little step back, but he's somebody that needs the ball. He needs to feel the ball. You know how, like, whenever Melo gets into the game, he gets it, then he does that little thing where he wraps his arms around it. That's an offensive player, like, getting used to this is how the ball feels. And so when you're a 3-and-D guy, Mike, you might not touch the ball for 2-3 minutes. And that's just really unusual for a player that comes from Talen's background of having the ball on every play for or most of them for much of his life. And so it's just a big transition for a guy like that I'm very curious to see what happens with Talen. And Mike, before we wrap up, I actually wanted to give some of my thoughts on the big man position that you guys were talking about yesterday. But before we do that, Darvin Ham, in your piece, had some insight on that position.
Yeah, so exactly. I did want to get your thoughts on this. So I asked him more, just what's the elevator pitch for the 4-out, 1-in style? And he says, well, it's all about being able to flatten the defense. And you start with two guys sprinting to the corners. And then there's another guy looking to be an immediate threat on the rim. So you're just, if you're thinking about the defense in a straight line, if you've got two guys running past it and then you've got another guy looking to go straight to the rim, then basically that has to be paid attention to. And that leaves that space for a LeBron or a Russ style player or any of the ball handlers that we just talked about to be able to go down and get an easy look. And if you're overloaded on like the strong side, he said you have a strong corner, an attack man, a string man, and a trail, and then a slasher and a weak side corner guy. So that's going to open up the driving lane. And then if the team can't the team can't cover the elbow and the nail, and you just can't create that wall. And I'm wondering how you think that plays in with the big men, with what Anthony Davis is, with what type of big men that you need next to that. And what Milwaukee did, for example, which was a little different with Brook Lopez and Bobby Portis. So I'd love all your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so the concepts that Ham is talking about there, a lot of them are transition concepts, right? Like that sprint deep corner or rim runner. The idea of flattening out the defense is related to those three spots in particular, because all of them at the end of their at the rim runner, at the end of their possession, are settling at rim depth, right? Like if you drew a parallel line from one sideline to sideline, the two guys in the corner are at rim depth, and then your dunker spot guy is either at rim depth or actually even behind the basket. We saw the decals on the floor yesterday that were the visual aids for the 4-out style. The maintenance of spacing, again, the 4-out spacing is not a rare thing in the NBA, but it's more about getting to your spots and if you cut through from a perimeter spot, you flow through back out to the perimeter to maintain those driving lanes. He had that quote in what you were saying, as well as that, like, that's the biggest thing is four out spacing is more conducive to driving to the basket off of the dribble than five out spacing is, because you have a natural double gap or close to it between the slot positions, which is up top, and then the corners, right? There's space between those spots. And so the defenders are a little further away. And when he's talking about the nail, he's talking about like help defenders, and that if you space it properly, you create a certain pick your poison scenario that when you have a great driver can really facilitate that. With respect to the big man position, this means you need to be able to have somebody that can rim run in the first place. And so that idea of being able to rim run and then or flow into early offense concepts, so like a lot of pistol actions, a lot of delays, a lot of quick hitters, 7 seconds or less type of stuff, that all kind of flows together from one concept to the next. And so it's, I think we're going to see a lot more ball screens this year. I think we're going to see fewer post-ups, fewer like throw the ball to the elbow type of things. But that second big man, it's tough, Mike, because that guy that can be that rim runner, if he's also a stretch big, he's probably doesn't weigh a ton. Does this make sense what I'm saying? Like, so think Mark Gasol, right? Like, Mark is that stretch five that is big and beefy and can, you know, bang with those other fives that, you know, you get AD off of the ball, but Mark's not going to rim run for you. And if a guy can rim run for you, fly up and down the court, is he going to be able to bang with Jonas Valanciunas, right? So you're asking for a lot out of one player. And there are a couple of guys that kind of fit that. But to me, the five spot and how we approach it is the pivot point for this offseason. And like the concept of the team is really like, who do we get to start at the five? And maybe it's Anthony Davis again. I don't know. But I think that that's really the key acquisition in terms of the style of play we're going to play.
Yeah, I already mentioned, I'd prefer that that's probably not Anthony Davis. But I don't likewise see, you know, I don't see a ton of great options that fit even a couple of those things that we're looking for. So, which fits into the rest of this, right? This is just there isn't some wealth of assets of guys that can come out there. But hey, I don't know for a fact that there won't be some that emerge here. So it's the same difference between the wish list and the reality list. And I think that we've covered the difficulties of why that is.
I wish we could talk specific names in context of this, right? Because there are a couple of guys where I'm like, I think that guy would be helpful. And if we don't go the stretch five route, I think that guy needs to come off of the bench. It just goes into that whole like Russ plus two bigs. You just don't have enough shooting on the floor if that's a lob threat guy. And so that's another way of going about it. If we do decide that there isn't that stretch five that we like to start alongside the two, I think that AD probably has to start at the five at that point. But the next time we talk, we will be able to talk specific names, and a lot of the moves will have been made. Most of the transactions will have been settled. But yeah, we're going to be off for the next week. So go Lakers. Good luck to the decision makers. I hope we get the guys that we're looking for, and then we come back on the other side of this looking at a new team that we're excited about, Mike.
Enjoy the break, and we will have a lot to talk about next time we're on.
That's right. That's right. All right. We'll see y'all on the other side. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double team. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Yes, Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five.
Bryant. Yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.